Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you so much, Dave Solomon. Woo! It's a beautiful day in Baltimore. This is one of those days, even though it's, February 21st at the time of this doing our live show. It's, of course, winter, but it just feels like one of those days where you wake up and you smell spring. Woo! It smells good. A little cold outside, that's okay. Just like Lisa Nichols says in The Secret, I know like I know like I know. Oh, mercy. Listen, here's the thing. I love the way this show kind of takes on a flavor of its own. Jonathan Kreisberg is going to be with us momentarily. I learned from DL Media and the lovely Maureen that family was in town. So he is like, Trish, can I talk to you in about 5 minutes or so? And I said, of course. So he's going to call back. And I thought in the meantime, you could get a taste of this awesome master guitarist. If you have never heard Jonathan Kreisberg, get ready. He has been around for a while. He has been playing guitar since he was very young. He has made so many inroads that Guitar Player Magazine and Downbeat Magazine featured him as a teen in their publications. I wanted to give you a taste of what dropped just Tuesday. It's a really stellar production, but it's a very simplistic production. The name of the project is called One. And the name of the piece that you're about to hear starts off the CD. It's called Canto di, let me get this right here because I don't want to mispronounce it, Osanha. And it's one of those songs, we'll explain the history of it, but it just enjoy Jonathan and his guitar from One on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. I told you it hasn't even been 10 minutes into the show, and now you've had two examples of the majesty of this man's playing. Hopefully this is him. We've got a couple of different phone numbers for the amazing Jonathan Kreisberg. Jonathan, and I'm hoping this is you.
It's me.
Yay!
calling you on the landline.
That's wonderful. Landlines are always better, as much as cell phones are terribly convenient. Landlines always have this bigger sound. So thank you so much, not only for that,
sure,
but thank you for being here.
Well, it's good to be at my home line for a change. I've been on the road a lot the past few months and about to be again, so it's nice to use my own phone for a change.
Yeah, I'll bet. And speaking of which, you know what? It's just a revelation to get to know you, because you will be on the road again very, very soon. And then to understand that however domestically you are received in this, your home country, they will appreciate you so much in Europe, it's not even funny, because you are this beautiful hybrid, Jonathan Kreisberg. you really are.
I'm enjoying this interview already. This is going great.
It's just so fantastic to see the breadth of work and who you cover on one with one instrument. It's mind-blowing. I mean, Leonard Cohen, you're covering Summertime, Skylark, Wayne Shorter, hello. And you don't come to do that without a great deal of expertise and confidence. How did you arrive at this particular point in your life?
Well, you know, people that know my records mostly know me as kind of, most of my records have either been slanted towards my originals, which are, you know, pretty sophisticated kind of,
yes,
modern New York kind of blend of you know, there's a bit of a kind of a movement, I would almost say, that began around the time I came to New York and some other cats that I came up with. And we all kind of had really studied a lot of bebop and a lot of the tradition of jazz, but we were really open-minded, and we also had played stuff like fusion and funk. And, you know, it's kind of like, I feel like historically it's going to have a name. Like, it doesn't really have a name, whatever this is that we've all been doing. But I feel like it's kind of like post-fusion, post-bop, kind of, or something like that. Because I think what it was, you know, you had a lot of reactions over the years, and reactions often take place and a kind of rejection happens. You know, when you had bebop, in a way, it was rejecting swing, you know, and the big bands. And then when you had, you know, 60s kind of jazz, a lot of course, the biggest influences on a lot of the guys that I came up with, you know, like Miles's band and stuff, they were kind of rejecting bebop in a way, and rejecting standard forms and standard harmonies. And this is, of course, guys like Herbie and Wayne Shorter. And, you know, and then you have fusion came along and rejected acoustic music, basically, and was so open that, and I don't even want to skip free music as a whole other thing, of course.
Yes.
But all these things were rejections, you know, which is great, because they had to happen historically in that way. And I feel like the guys that I came up with, what we're doing is actually the antithesis of that. We don't really reject anything, you know. It's like anything can happen in the music we're doing. And we love all those movements. I mean, it's a tribute to those guys, but in a way it's also unique in the openness of it. You know, in my band, there can be a tune that's rooted in bebop, but with some kind of world music rhythms, and then some kind of sounds that you would associate with, like a fusion guitar player. And then, you know, so I kind of, for me, that's always been a real exciting thing. And then, of course, more recently, the past few years, I started playing with Dr. Lonnie Smith.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like, a confirmation of what I'd been doing, because here's a guy who's like my kind of like soul godfather, you know, and he has exactly the same attitude when he plays music. It's just completely open to whatever you're feeling, you know, and that can be great in a way that's different than the music that has to kind of say no to stuff, you know what I mean, in order to find its place, which is important too, I think, at some point. So that being said, that's kind of what's led me up to who I am as a musician and a composer. I've got a lot of records doing those, my original music, a lot of records doing standards in my own way. And I'd never done a solo guitar record, even though people that know me and know my playing and know me personally know that I'm apt to pick up a guitar and just play for them. You know, that's something I often did over the years. And just with the scope of what I'd done, it just felt really right that it was time for me to document my intimate relationship with a guitar, you know, which is really different than playing in a band.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Having had Ken Navarro, who was a friend of mine based in Maryland, Ken attempted to do this and did a beautiful job with his last project. And,
nice.
You know, you have to feel as though you are one with the instrument. This
absolutely.
There's such a fluidity that comes to an artist who knows the ins and outs of what that guitar can do and what you want to express. Like, for instance, Jonathan, I was hearing Hallelujah on the album, and it's really funny. I don't know why this happens. It's just so beautiful, and you can't explain it. If you could, it would lose its mystery, like falling in love. But why is
sure.
it that when, you know, you've heard a song that has a lyric to it, all of a sudden, when you hear someone do it instrumentally, you hear the song for the first time? And that's what happened when I heard Hallelujah through your fingers.
Oh, thank you. That's a great compliment.
It is.
Yeah, I think especially a tune like that, when you have such iconic versions of it, like Leonard Cohen's, and the one that was obviously the biggest influence on me was Jeff Buckley's version, which is...
Yeah, just beautiful.
I've heard people record it since him, and I don't know how any singer could record that after him, because he just owned that song, you know? So for me, even if I was a singer, I never would have attempted it, because I just think his version was like, certain times you get a version of a tune and it's like, well, that's that, you know? But I decided to try and fuse his vocal approach with, you know, basically one of my fingers and the other one playing more of the guitar part, to try and combine them into one performance. And that was one of the trickiest things on the record, but I think one of my favorite things, because it came out as a real, just like I'm always playing things that are tributes to Wayne Shorter or to Charlie Parker, it was cool to do one that was a tribute to Jeff Buckley. And that really felt like something. I met him a couple times when he was alive, and it was a really special cat.
Oh, my
cat,
gosh.
So,
really?
Yeah.
Bless
it was a real, that was a big loss. Big loss.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, that was one of the ones. There was probably two tunes when I finished them. That's when I knew that I had something on my hands that was bigger than what I set out to do. Because I basically bought a couple nice mics, and I said, let me see what will happen, you know. I recorded this record. It says Argyle Studios, but everyone who knows me well knows that I live on Argyle Street. So it was totally recorded at home. And that was kind of the concept of the record, is when I basically have a tune that I get obsessed with, like I often do, like Hallelujah, in the past I would just play with it and have fun and then I would forget about it, you know, because playing solo is not really something I usually tour with and things like that. So I decided when I got struck by that inspiration, I would try and document it, you know, and that Hallelujah really was one, when I finished that, I said, oh, okay, this is going to be one of the centerpieces of the record.
Oh, there's no question. And you know, you were going back to talking about singers who record a song that has been done so monumentally and so memorably by somebody else. Whatever the circumstances are of an artist wanting to do a song, I have to believe that it's not something that you want to do, but it's something that you so feel led to do that you have no
right.
choice, like you with Hallelujah and some of these other songs. Just
yeah.
brilliant takes on another dimension to a song that, you know, we had been so used to through the years. But when somebody comes along who has this freshness at looking at it, it all of a sudden pops. And Skylark, there's another one. How many people have done that song through the years? But
sure.
Here you are.
Yeah, I tried to capture maybe a slightly different angle on both those tunes. I mean, on Hallelujah, there's definitely the tribute to Jeff, but then in the middle section, I just wanted to keep it open to see. And I think it got a little more into the corners and the dissonance, you know, which I wanted it to do. I wanted it to do that and kind of, and the blues of it, you know, because the tune is usually done a little more, I want to say, gothicness, you know, and I think I took it to a little more dissonant, religious kind of aspect side of it or something. With some blues thrown in, you know, it's hard, I don't know, like you said, like, talking about music is tap dancing about architecture.
Right, and you know what, you were absolutely groomed to be wonderfully all over the page as you were growing up, because you were in a house that was full of Coltrane and Cream and conductors like John Williams. You were listening to everything, so that's ingrained in your soul. That's a beautiful thing.
Sure. Well, I guess so. I mean, that's what I'm saying about the openness side aspect of kind of what I'm trying to do, you know, is not to, even though you've got to be specific about what you want to do, I like keeping, I'm always careful not to be one of those guys that in order to love something, you have to reject other things. Because I've seen that. It even happens now among some of our peers. You see that kind of behavior, and I just think you're shooting yourself in the foot. You know, you can find beautiful things in everything and try and be a real master at what you do, which is hard these days because so much, you know, people have lost a little bit the art of craftsmanship. You know, they're used to computers doing things for them, and they're so ADD, everybody, you know.
You're right. And not only that, maybe you agree or not, but I find that folks just need to relax. There are so many artists who are looking over their shoulder at what everybody else is doing, and they're not paying attention to what their lives have in the way of unfolding. As opposed to looking at what is happening in your life and what inspires you, people are so caught up by the success of other people. I have found that now, and oh my gosh, you're right. We are an ADD society, and true artists need to take a breath and just move forward. There's so much to capture in the way of new ideas and new developments in your music. I'm so glad that you said what you said. It's not a rejection of anything. It's an incorporation of everything.
That's the idea, to do that with sophistication and craftsmanship. That's kind of the basis of probably of what I'm going for.
Jonathan?
Why don't we listen to one of those things? What about the Hallelujah? Do they hear that yet?
Oh, you know what? Look, I was going to close the show with that, but that's okay because I've got four songs. Before we get to that, tell me, we heard two tracks at the beginning of the show. And one of those tracks is Without Shadow, one of your originals. That is so – I might play that again.
You mean now?
Well, not necessarily now, but, I mean, it struck me. I was like, whoa, it's a minute and 20 seconds. And one after the other, whoa, was coming out of my mouth. Your head
is – what was the first tunes you – which two tunes did you play?
I played Canto de Osana.
Oh, great. Right. Yeah, that was the one that definitely, that and Hallelujah were the two that kind of, for me, launched the record when I knew I had something. But Without Shadow is actually, that was a real off-the-cuff thing. It's basically just an improvisation based on the framework of a tune called Shadowless, which is, of course, off my last band CD, Shadowless.
Yes.
And I just kind of came up with some sound thing, and I started having fun with it, and I pressed record, and that was basically it.
He
some
truly
of the
loved
on the record. Took a lot of premeditation and kind of conceptual thought, and some of them were just really off the cuff, like that one. And actually, the only two originals on the record were both flat out improvisations. You know, the last tune on the record was completely improvised, just a soundscape or something, I guess you could say. After I improvised it, now to me I hear it as like almost like a soundtrack to like a Blade Runner kind of movie or something. Yeah.
One of my favorite movies. Yes, I can certainly see that.
Yeah.
You have a way of, and I know that you really do love to improvise, and it's funny because there have been a couple of guests on the show in the past few years that have said that everything we do is improvisation. And I had an interview recently from one of the greats who said that he doesn't believe in improvisation. And I was so startled because he is so legendary in many circles. And
nice. Who is that?
Gary Bartz.
Oh, cool. So let me hear his whole answer, though. That sounds like a partial answer, so I'm curious.
He is just so adamant about wanting to honor the song that to take a deviant road from the path seems disrespectful.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But he still obviously improvises solos. So I think he was probably making a point because he's a real, real bright and amazing musician. So I'm sure.
Ah, incredible.
I bet you that he was. I know what he's talking about in a way, because I think sometimes when we hear certain people say certain things about improvising or something, it can kind of hit us in a funny way. You know what I mean? Yeah, because I would have to say that, yeah, a great improvisation has so much background in it. To call it pure improvisation is almost, it almost demeans the idea of what it is, because you've studied the tunes to such a point that the melody is always in the back of your mind. You've studied the language to the point that the language is like speaking a sentence, like me talking to you right now, you know. I'm arranging the words in different orders. I'm not even thinking about it. I'm like, my thought happens and the words come out of my mouth. Even as I'm doing it now, I'm finding it amazing that people can do that.
Yes, right.
But,
I understand.
You know, I mean, someone like Gary, who's been doing that for so many years musically, it's kind of like we can think, someone who's not as enlightened may say that they're improvising, you know what I mean? But the truth is, he knows that he's learned all these tunes, he's learned all this language, he's learned how to put the language together in a way that becomes his own dialect. So in a way, you know, it is improvisation, but it's also something else, you know. It's something else, which is, it's not playing a written piece at all, but it's dealing with language on a really heavy level, you know. And I'm not sure, I can't speak for him, so I don't know exactly what he meant by that, but that's kind of what my take on that would be. You know, of course, there's things I'm doing that are improvised. I mean, most of that record is, I would call it improvised, but there's so much, especially in solo guitar, when you're playing, you know, something like Hallelujah, it's impossible for it not to become, it already is such a composition, and there's so much respect for the way a certain person sang it and a certain person played guitar that you're kind of hearing in your head even before you play it. So ultimately, as a great musician, you're playing what you hear in your head, you know?
And you just said it, and you and Gary are cut from the same cloth as far as this is concerned. His whole demeanor during the time that we spent together was the fact that he wanted to honor what had already been done. You do the same thing. You said this. You have in your head respect and honor for what the groundwork has been to be laid out before you. Now, because you have taken all of this in, ingested all this musical bliss through the years, now it's in you passionately to be able to give a gift of what your ears hear as far as the love that you've learned? Oh, my God, I'm talking in such New Age terms. And I don't mean to. It's just coming out that way.
Well, that's. I mean, yeah, hopefully that's – hopefully, I mean, if I had to sum up music and for me the concept of most of my records, and for sure this one maybe even more than others, is basically just that we're just digesting all this amazing music of the masters and sometimes music of non-masters, just someone who happened to stumble across a cool groove or a cool sound, you know?
Yes.
Even that's what I was saying before, is if you stay open, you can even learn something listening to a kid play music, you know what I mean? It's just having a good filter of what you choose to make a part of your language, and then this thing we call improvising, of course, is our own way of speaking the sound we hear in our head, and that's exactly what I went for on this record. Just if I did that, interacting basically with myself, you know, as opposed to a band like I've done all those years, you know.
And what a beautiful job. And now let's dive into Hallelujah, because the chat room is eager. I mean, I can almost see them yipping. please play.
Like, yeah, enough talking. This comes out a lot.
This is the amazing Jonathan Kreisberg, and from his brand new CD called One, this is the beautiful Leonard Cohen song, Hallelujah, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
so glorious. Jonathan Kreisberg is our guest on Hybrid Jazz, and that is from the brand spanking new One CD, and it is, it really is. There have been different kinds of people that I've seen through the years. Gosh, Jeff, Buckley was so beautiful. And Jonathan, I have to tell you that I remember Tim Buckley, his dad, because I grew up in the 60s.
Cool. Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So, you know, in hearing and seeing these different musicians through the years, there are some people that you just make a connection with. And even when I see you on the cover of the new album, you just look like you are transported. It means everything to you. Did you always know when you picked up the guitar the first time that you were going to have this lifelong love affair with it?
Well, I think you definitely don't think about that at that point, because I was 9 or 10 years old. But
yeah.
There was definitely a point maybe a few years later where I think it had to do with the connection with the audience, you know. I mean, I loved playing, but I don't think it became a life path until I was playing a performance at some point, which probably consisted of some improvising, because, you know, that's what attracted me back to the improvising concept. I mean, you know, I learned some classical music when I was young, too, and I played a couple of concerts playing, you know, classical guitar things like Bach and, you know, simpler stuff as well. And I always felt so conscious, self-conscious, and maybe not quite present enough when I was playing that stuff, because I was feeling like I was watching my hands move, and kind of gave me a lot of room to get nervous, you know. And as soon as I was playing any music where I was being creative, which whether it was rock at the time, because, you know, when you're a kid learning guitar, that's kind of what you do, is rock and blues and stuff like that. And when I was doing that, I was completely lost in the moment, the way I was when I was at home, just being creative, you know. And I couldn't even, this is years later when I can look back and kind of realize that that's what led me, you know, besides hearing the great jazz records my dad had, I didn't know how to connect that to the guitar yet at that age, you know. But I was definitely, something was pulling me towards this kind of music where you had to be fully present. To improvise, you have to be possessed in a way, you know, by what you're doing. You have to,
for sure,
study the craft, but also be present. You can't just watch your hands move. As you know, most great classical performers, they'll kind of tell you that that's what a performance consists of, actually watching their hands perform, basically, because their muscle memory is so strong, and they've practiced this stuff to the point where it's a bit of you've done the work, now just let it happen, you know, which is that is the same about improvised music in a way too, but it's a real different angle in that you're thinking or you're processing so much more information when you're improvising, or, you know. So, yeah, I think I was always attracted to that, and that connection is kind of what I wanted to be in the forefront of recording One, you know, was just kind of the freedom of solo guitar, the way to respect all this tradition and all these other great pieces of music, but also to have freedom with the improvising, with the dynamics, with the form. Yeah, I wanted people to feel like they were sitting right in front of the guitar, basically just kind of experiencing that someone connecting with their instrument. And, it was a challenge, because I wanted the records to also have a journey. All my records, I don't want them to feel like, you know, I have a certain appreciation for the MP3 generation, but I still love albums, you know.
Oh, yeah.
you know, so that's important for me. Even after I first recorded the first two or three tunes, I was already starting to imagine how the record was going to kind of unfold, you know.
And it's so wonderful that when there is a listener's ear hearing each of these tracks, it becomes it becomes whatever that you're doing at the time. If you're in a romantic situation, you feel more romance, I would imagine. It's been a long time. Never mind. Or it can be a spiritual journey in that you are thinking of hopeful things. There's an inordinate amount of hope that comes from each of these songs, and it's probably because you clearly are so in love with playing that it's important for you to handle all of these songs with care. So it can go into a spiritual direction. It just becomes, you can be completely absorbed and listen, or you can have it in the background, and all of a sudden a mood changes. You're ready to face the day. It's really so infused with so much. It's like meat and potatoes music, Jonathan. It's the best that I can imagine of what an artist can do with an instrument. I want now to hear artists do this in a singular fashion with their instruments, be it sax or keyboard. I want to hear what they do because of the amazing work that you've done.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, you know, I have a lot of respect for some classic recordings of solo musicians, and I kind of feel like in my generation, not too many guys have done it, and I'd love to hear. If that's the case and more people are inspired to do it, I would be the happiest guy around. I mean, I kind of, like, I can think of most of my favorite musicians. I would love to hear their voice in a solo setting, you know. There was one that came out recently that I really loved, which was Tigran Hamasyan. He's a piano player, and he did a great solo record last year. And that was because I was already in my mind that I wanted to get into it. And when he did that, I thought it was a great statement too, very unique. And I'd hope that more people do it because there isn't any other setting where you hear someone so purely just kind of speaking to you, you know.
And it's,
of course,
a way...
Keith Jarrett being a great influence of mine. So, you know, Keith's solo stuff. But there's great classic guitar recordings. I didn't listen to them when I was making this album. I listened to them after, and I said, wow, I'm glad I didn't listen to those before. But there's two that obviously, you know, there was one that was Tuck Andrus had a great record called Effortless Mastery, which is just beautiful. And then, of course, the classic that everybody talks about all the time is Joe Pass's Virtuoso. Is another amazing record, and so kind of off-the-cuff seeming, you know?
Yes. And you brought back Tuck. Oh my gosh, Patty and Tuck, Tuck and Patty used to play all the time in Philadelphia, where I'm from.
Oh yeah.
And oh my gosh,
yeah,
they were
road dogs. They worked all
they
the time.
They were.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's so wonderful to know that they are still creating this magic with their music because they always did that. They seem to be so connected. And that's another thing. You know, when you have this connection to your instrument or to a person that you're dealing with, it brings us to a point that we desperately need these days, certainly in the United States, which is a feeling of serenity. Did you feel as though when you captured all of this on this project, did you feel at peace with yourself?
Oof, I don't know if that's a word I would use for this process.
It was my
first,
well,
you know, my first solo record, so it was a little bit more like giving birth, I would say, you know. I guess at some point after the baby is in your arms, you feel some peace, right? So that's probably the point I felt peace, you know. The process itself was definitely, you know, for me, all my records are like that. They're like kind of painful, but they're like also... You know something good is happening, you know, so it's like it's worth it, you know. But, you know, a lot of us jazz musicians, we would love to just, you know, basically play our little gigs and work on our craft till the end of our days. We're pretty happy kind of guys as far as, if you really press us as far as playing music, you know what I mean? Making records is almost like a little bit of a funny concept. And I used to think it was weird that I felt that way. And then once again, someone like Lonnie, who's like a legend, and when I realized that he's exactly the same way, that it's kind of, if you're an improviser, making records is a funny concept because it's recording a moment and you've already changed. You know what I mean? The second you record it, you've already moved on, you know? So making a document that you're really happy with and that you're happy with now that you did 3 days ago is really hard to do, you know? So I think especially
really
playing solo, you feel really vulnerable when you play solo, you know? So it's that part of it was tricky. I recorded probably four other tunes that I will never see the light of day, just that I just said, yeah, you know, it doesn't fit this project, and I, you know, for whatever reason, I just, you know, I had to be, to create that kind of a feeling through a record, sometimes you have to be pretty self-critical, and you have to really listen to it like you're a harsh critic, you know what I mean? And then you can kind of develop a mood, which is, I think, what you're saying. I think that's kind of, you have to be very conscious of that mood, you know?
It's you've said a couple of different things that no
yeah,
artist. Yeah. Well, I mean, a different way of looking at recording process and the way you perceive your art. It's got a lot to do with, I think, your background, because I was very impressed that here you are at the University of Miami and you held down that guitar chair. And then post graduation, you're touring. You're off with Joe Henderson and playing with Michael Becker. You were fully.
Well, actually, the truth is that those guys I played with while I was in school. They weren't. I didn't go on the road with those guys. I was really young at that point. That was just to be true to history. I would have loved to have been touring with those guys, but I had chances as a student to play with them. The guys I played with on the road later were guys like Lonnie Smith and Joe Locke and Ari Honig and a lot. That was more in my professional career. But
you did.
My experiences with those guys was great, and I learned a lot, and I asked them a lot of questions. So that was, you know, really important.
You were in the same space, and actually that does make a difference. I mean, how many times now have I lamented that, you know, here was Michael Brecker, who was actually going to high school at the same time as me. We went to different high schools about three blocks apart from each other, and I
wow.
never got to meet him.
Where was that? Where did he grow up? I'm not even sure.
Montgomery County, in a suburban Philadelphia. He went to Cheltenham High School. I was going to Bishop McDevitt, and we literally probably crossed paths so many times but never formally met. So.
Right.
When, you know,
beautiful guy, amazing.
Oh, my, yes, and in retrospect now, but you were there, and all of these experiences for you, you were playing progressive rock. You were in a symphony under Michael Tilson Thomas. You really cut your teeth on a wide swath of different kinds of music. So, and then being born in New York and going to Miami and coming back to New York, that had to make a difference, too, in how good that you felt about how good of a gift you have.
Well, I think also just about really appreciating New York. Somehow my growing up that way really helped me with that, because we moved to Miami when I was really young. And I never really fit in Miami, and I feel like everything happens for a reason. I know that sounds kind of, you know, passé, and everyone says
oh,
that,
I agree.
You know? But I really, you know, in some cases, and in this case, it really did work out in a way, because that sense of not quite fitting in is probably one of the things that helped me. And you'll find that with a lot of really serious musicians, that they have some similar reasons in their life that made music kind of their love and their religion and everything, you know what I mean? So I think part of just being feeling like a New Yorker in Miami was part of what probably helped me be myself in music. And also what guided me back to New York, and when I moved back to New York, that sense of belonging to that place, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know, the homecoming, you know. So I came back to New York, was a great inspiration and a great energy where I had come from a place like Miami, where in Miami you can work and do those things. You can play with, you know, one night with a great jazz group. The next night you could play a top 40 gig. The next night you could play with the Backstreet Boys. Then the next night you could play with the New World Symphony, doing some music of Kurt Weill and things like that. And then the next night you could play a funk gig, you know. And that's something you can't really do in New York, because in New York everybody comes here being the best at what they do. And that was what I needed at that time, you know.
Good point.
And a very specific concept of what they want to do. So in other words, in New York, you're going to have someone who's playing in the symphony who's the best reader and the best classical musician in the world. You're going to have someone playing in the jazz club who's the best jazz musician in the world. You're going to have someone who's playing a top 40 gig who knows every Earth, Wind, and Fire tune, you know, in the book, you know. So you're going to have all these guys with these real specific training, you know. And when I moved to New York, at that point, I knew what I wanted to do. It was to combine this love of improvisation with a respect for the tradition of jazz, but also the openness of all these kinds of music I'd done. So that was very specific. You know, I got calls for other things, and I said no, because I just knew what I was there for at that point. And, you know, I think that's what is great about New York. It kind of pushes you a little bit in the chest, and it says, hey, what are you doing here? What are you doing here?
Right.
And if you say I don't know, then it says, all right, get the hell out of here. but if it pushes you in the chest and you say, I know what I'm here. Don't push me. I'm here to do this. Now get out of my way. that's the guys that come to New York and do well, you know.
Oh yeah. And if you're going to learn and be quiet. Don't get up on that stage wanting to learn licks. Because
so there's that too.
Yeah, man, I've heard those stories, and that's exactly what I think of when I think of you, Jonathan. You really do have such love for what has gone before in the way of jazz. It's so beautiful to hear somebody express their love for jazz, and here you are. This is going to be a real revelation for many when they hear this CD called One. Because, I mean, I've been doing this for a little while, but I heard a couple of songs on the CD, especially, you know, the intro, Canto di Asagna. I heard that, and I went, oh, my God, I never knew what the name of that was.
Yeah, it's such a great melody.
It really is. And if you're steeped in that, we had great radio stations growing up in Philly, and some of them were AM. And we heard some of these songs done by the original beautiful artists in Portuguese. I mean, when this big jazz samba revolution came to the States, we were right there listening to all of it. So there was
I got to talk to my mom about that. My mom's a Philly girl.
Is she?
Yeah, she was a Germantown friend school.
Get out of Dodge. Oh, that is so funny. Oh,
which is funny, the same school that Ari Honig went to, the drummer that I, you know, years later would record with. And, you know, he's also, there's dad's the music teacher there, actually.
it's
all connected.
A small world.
Yeah. Hey, so are you gonna play one more tune? I actually have...
Of course.
Great. What are you feeling?
Actually, one of the songs that struck me, because here is your take on it, and all of a sudden I'm dancing around the room because you breathed life into Caravan.
Oh, nice! Yeah, that's the fun one. That was kind of like a weird disjointed tribute to the Gypsies, you know. I hope they all liked it.
Well, you're going to hang out with me until the end of it, right?
Sure. We'll talk a little while it's going.
Well, actually, we can't do that while I'm playing the song. So hold on for me.
Hear us, huh?
Yeah,
I got,
absolutely.
I hate to say it in front of all your people, but I got an interview at 2 o'clock. What time is it now?
Oh, my gosh. You know what? Then I'll let you go. No, that's fine. I'm going to let you go, and you are going full tilt boogie with these interviews now, because the CD just came out 2 days ago.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's
do
right.
your thing. And
we were number six on the iTunes downloads yesterday. Number six. Pretty nice. Be up there with Louie and Wayne. Not bad.
That's wonderful, Jonathan. I really do appreciate your time because I knew that you were going to be slammed today. So thanks for stopping by. God bless you.
Well, I hope that your listeners enjoyed it. And also, I just want to let everyone know you can get the CD now at my website at jonathankreisberg.com, but it's also at iTunes and Amazon. It's all over the place now. So it's a grassroots label. I started the label myself. So anyone who picks up the CD is directly helping me continue doing what I'm doing. So thank you so much in advance for listening.
And honestly, we'll keep in touch with you as far as folks that have tuned into this interview, because lately the numbers have been astronomical, and folks who hear this live, they will be outrageous, but then the folks who listen to this in archive mode, I will keep you abreast of that. Okay?
Oh, that's great. Perfect.
All right, Jonathan.
Thanks, Trish. It was great to meet you.
Great to meet you, too. Much success to you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Enjoy caravan, folks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jonathan Kreisberg. Oh, let's do it. One of these tracks that's just exhilarating from one, and you'll see exactly what I mean right now on Hybrid Jazz. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you.
the floor and watch the door, and in between I drink black coffee. Love's a hand-me-down brew. I'll never know a Sunday in this weekday. To the shadows, 1 o'clock to four, and Lord, how slow the moments go when all I do is pour black coffee. Since the blues caught my, I'm hanging.
Ella, don't stop. Please, just don't stop. We already have a report from Matt in the chat room that the lights have gone off in his office and the door's closed. He was chilling to black coffee. Oh, my. From what is considered to be one of Ella Fitzgerald's finest works, going back to 1960. Originally in a very interesting package called Ella Fitzgerald Sings Let No Man Write My Epitaph, which was a movie. And I've always wanted to see that. I can never get my hands on it. If you can, let me know. But it was transported into, if you will, an album called The Intimate Ella. It was Ella and her pianist Paul Smith. And here we were talking to Jonathan Kreisberg about the relationship that he has with his guitar. And there are those miracle connections that people have with their instruments or with other people. And Ella had it with Paul on this particular album. Just so beautiful. That song, by the way, so popular. How many people have recorded that through the years? Sonny Burke and Paul Francis Webster wrote that, published back in 1948. And there are some definitive versions that people will tell you are their favorites, but it's hard to top that one right there. Miss Ella Fitzgerald. There you go, Matt. I will get your song by Ella and Louie on one of these days. Man, there's so much work that those two did together. That's another magical connection, right? Unbelievable. And Slim Man told me this, just an aside. about Ella and Louie when they used to record, because, you know, they did not have the technology back in the day. So here they were, live as it happens in the studio. So Louie would sing, and then he would come away from the microphone, and sometimes you would hear him do that to play the trumpet, and Ella would sing. She would come up to the microphone, and they had to share one much of the time when they were singing their songs. So beautiful. Wes Montgomery we heard. Oh, my. West Coast Blues from the incredible jazz guitar of Wes Montgomery, also 1960. You know how I like to dip back. Beautiful work. Tommy Flanagan on piano, Percy Heath on bass from the Modern Jazz Quartet at the time, Albert Heath on drums, and Wes doing that, what the Penguin Guide to Jazz calls one of their core collections, this particular album, just made Pat Metheny jump up and down when he was a young guy hearing Wes Montgomery. The style of Wes, this exemplified the best of what he did. What he did was he used octaves, playing the same note on two strings, one octave apart, and then that thumb, nobody else sounded like Wes Montgomery because of his thumb picking. And I have to tell you this in case you never heard this. I just love this, and it makes me cry because of how much Wes Montgomery loved his wife. The reason he picked up the use of his thumb so much is that back in the days when he and his wife were together and he wasn't becoming so well known for his artistry, he was a machinist. So he would come back home and he would be playing the guitar, but his wife was sleeping. So as not to wake her, it was gentler for him to use his thumb. That is the story of how he came to be so well known for that particular style. I just love him so much hearing that. And Jonathan Kreisberg, it was certainly a no-brainer to play Wes Montgomery after Jonathan, after what we've heard from the brand new CD called One. And by the way, we didn't talk about this. It needs to be said a couple of different times. No overdubs, no loops, or extra tracks on what Jonathan did on that album. It was just he and that instrument playing it as it goes, and sometimes just stuff coming out of his head. I'm glad he recorded it, because when he gets to play a couple of his originals that are on the CD, he's got to remember what he did. Oh, play it exactly the way you played it on the album, Jonathan. Yeah, good luck with that. Beautiful stuff. And before we go today, we'll play that track that we played earlier. It's just so creative, just beautiful. And speaking of which, a little bit more guitar, if you will. Chris Standring got together with his friend Al DeGregoris. You've heard Al on the show. This is one of those beautiful tracks on Al's Times and Travels CD. Al took a trip to a foreign location, and he was just taken with what he saw around him. And it got translated into this particular song called Bamboo Forest on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
A tornado is blowing, and there's a twist of tonight. Black funnel cloud rolling, destroying everything inside. Oh, 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 Mother Nature, running wild again. Ain't no begging for mercy when the world comes to an end.
Comes to an end.
Hey, yeah, I said it comes to an end. Hello.
Comes to an end.
Oh, comes to an end. A heavy rain is coming. Lord, have mercy on me. Yeah. A hardship and trouble. The evil gonna learn to pray. The earth will be torn asunder. I believe it's a judgment day. When the waters parted, a brand new frontier was born. Oh, God sent the lightning, He sent the thunder and the rain. And then He calmed the heavens and heard to rejoice again.
Rejoice again. Rejoice again.
Hey, hey, rejoice again. Rejoice and rejoice.
Rejoice again.
Ripping trees and houses, destroying everything in sight. Oh, a tornado is coming just over the hill. In the heat and the quiet, the judge out of the field.
Over the hill,
oh,
over the hill.
Oh, just over the hill. Have mercy.
Over the hill.
Have mercy. Do I love that song? Do I love this woman? You might not be familiar, but you'll get to be because the show is called Hybrid Jazz. Rory Block really does not consider herself to be a jazz artist, as it were. But going back to 1996, when I heard this, whoa, Lord, was it full of inspiration, different kinds of tunes. Rory is steeped in the blues, but she just spread her wings and she flew on this particular track and every single track on the album. This CD is worn to a frazzle, can I just tell you? Rory is still doing her thing. There's an interesting story about her. She's approaching her mid-60s now. She's been doing her thing for a long time. Her dad was named Alan Block, and Alan had a sandal shop in Greenwich Village. Rory would see all the greats coming back and forth because, you know, sandals and folk singers, that was what was happening. So here are these different kinds of folks, black, white, yellow, red people all coming into Dad's shop. And Rory was inspired enough to pick up a guitar. So she learned classical, and at 14, one of those folks who saw some promise in her turned her on to the blues. And she was so in love with what she heard that at the age of 15, she left home, and she set out to find the living legends still involved in making blues music. She was fearless, and through the years, she has had accolade after accolade, multiple awards. I was fortunate enough to meet her when I was working at QVC. She actually came on QVC, and she was pitching one of her albums, and it was one of those Michelle Obama situations, girl crush time, woo, because Rory has this long, long hair, and she's just so earthy and sexy and full of the music. I mean, you could hear that. Tornado, the title track of this 1996 release, with Rory on all harmonies and acoustic guitar, Jeff Mironov on electric guitar, Will Lee on bass, Jerry Marotta on drums, and you know who was playing synthesizer on that? Paul Schaefer. Thank you very much. Yes, of the David Letterman Show. So Paul was doing his thing with a whole bunch of people, including Greg Adams, who you will hear coming up on Hybrid Jazz. So it's just so fun to pass along the information about these incredible artists. Ira Sullivan, another. He will be 82 in May, still doing his thing. Born in Washington, D.C., and was active in the 50s jazz scene, but he wanted to get out of the rat race. He moved to Miami, and he stayed away from the fray, but respect, holy tamale, Dad taught him trumpet at a young age, Mom taught him sax. He has since learned to play the flugelhorn, the flute, the alto flute. He plays tenor and soprano sax, multi-instrumentalist, and newly inspired at the time they were first on the scene by Pat Metheny, there's that name again, and Jaco Pastorius. So Ira moved back to New York for a while and got involved heavily again in the jazz scene and played with Red Rodney and a whole bunch of other folks. But, man, on that particular track from Peace, 1978, that track was called 10 Minutes, Vento Bravo with Joe DiOrio on guitar, John Hurd on bass, Billy Higgins on drums, and Kenneth Nash on piano. Ira handling everything else. Just amazing to know that we still have in our midst. I was hanging on to Donald Byrd for as long as I could, but he left us on the 4th of February. But Ira Sullivan is still with us, and anybody who is of that particular age, I just run toward. It's just so amazing to hear what they have to say and what stories they've had through the years. So there you go, Ira Sullivan. Al de Gregoris. Al de Gregoris, if you prefer, he gets both. Al from his Times and Travels CD. Multi-instrumentalist. Al is one of those guys, honestly, he doesn't have to do anything, and here's why. He's also a lawyer. He's got work to do every day. And on that particular track with him, Bamboo Forest, is Chris Standring. Times and Travels also features Jeff Kashua, also Eric Marienthal, Kieli Minucci, the guys that Al hangs out with and has gotten to know through the past several years. Really good friend. Al has helped me out in ways that he doesn't understand, but he got me into a right path about my legal situation, and I really appreciate it. Just great on that piano,
And I'm hoping that really wonderful things happen to him all over again in 2013, because that's when the CD was released, just last year. Coming up for you, we've got Foreplay, and we also have one of the regulars in the chat room, one of her favorites. This particular young man swept the Whammies, which are the Washington Area Music Association Awards. He swept the contemporary urban category just several days ago. He's coming up. Right now, another man that we love in this region, and God knows he is loved beyond, an amazing reputation, and more guitar, actually. But as far as a guru in this region, we bow to Carl Filipiak. This is very cool from his album called Hotel Real. This is a Stevie Wonder song, 'Cause We've Ended as Lovers, on Hyper Jazz.
can't climb this wall that surrounds you. I can't see through. I wonder, do you hear the sound? It's getting loud. It's our love crashing to the ground. Lay down with me. Hold on to me. Pull me close and please don't. All night, I'm gonna prove to you that I love you. I'm gonna bear my soul, and the tears will roll till we get it right. If it takes all night, you know I have always believed you, and I've been true. Yeah, yeah. Secrets are the same as half-truths. Oh, we've had a few. Give me just one single room. We'll light up the moon to recapture the rapture of you. Baby, I believe in you and me. Right here in your arms is where I'm meant to be. All night, I'm gonna prove to you that I love you. I'm gonna bear my soul, and the tears will roll till we get it right. If it takes all night, I won't make promises that I can't keep. And if you get dizzy, girl, I will stop the world from spinning fast, so we can kiss away the past. I'm gonna bear my soul, and tears will roll till we get it right. If it takes all night, if it takes all night, I'm gonna prove to you that I love you. I'm gonna bear my soul, and tears will roll till we get it right. If it takes all night, yeah.
I'm just so proud to be able to play my friend's music for you. Woo! Eric Scott, If It Takes All Night, from his very well-received, shall we say, CD, Where the Water Runs Deepest. Eric Scott, this is the same man who showed up at my birthday gathering, came clear across town. I mean, more than that. Back October 16th. Just a wonderful guy. You can certainly learn more about him at ericscottmusic.com. Eric just swept the whammies. Let me tell you how significant the whammies are, the Washington Area Music Association. D.C. has a lot of different kinds of extremely talented people, whether it be a folk, country, blues, jazz, oh, so many jazz, R&B, actually electronica, hip-hop, all different kinds of genres. And Eric, you know, look, he was on the show. He doesn't necessarily know what kind of category he falls into. He doesn't care. He's just writing music from his heart. This album is full of original music, just like the one you heard, If It Takes All Night. Was that a cool song? Oh, my God. Just full of these kinds of tunes. He really doesn't know. You know, Eric has made it a point to talk about his biracial background.
And Mom had a wide variety of different kinds of music when he was growing up. Dad had left. Mom turned her son on to rock and jazz and blues and soul. So all of that got in his system. And then he got to know Dad as time went on, and Dad is a minister. So Eric is one of those guys that's hard to classify, but not according to the Whammy Committee, because Eric, in every single category he was nominated in, he swept the urban contemporary category. Best vocalist, best duo or group scenario, best instrumentalist, and best album. Eric, we love you. We have always loved you. Griselda loves you in particular. And we really, honestly, are very proud. He deserves it. He's been doing his thing for a while. I know a lot about Eric that he doesn't know that I know. It's just as well, hon. But he is a good-hearted, extremely talented person, and he's just reeling because nobody saw this coming. Eric Scott. Foreplay, we heard Venus, the title of that track, so delicious, from Esprit de Four, the latest from Foreplay, in Japan right now without Harvey Mason. Harvey had surgery on his right Achilles tendon in December, and the doctors did not want him to make this trip. So he is not real happy, but he had to bow to his doctor's wishes. So Clarence Penn is filling in with Foreplay. And I don't know what they're doing about doing Harvey's songs on the album, but Venus is one of them. Just a beautiful song. A Harvey Mason original. And just sounded so beautiful because Bob James and Chuck Loeb and Nathan do such a cool job of interpreting one another's brainchilds. Each of them had a couple of songs apiece on this, and it's really a wonderful CD. Harvey Mason, love you, baby. Hopefully you're getting back to Atlantic City on your downtime. Hopefully somebody else is driving. Please. Carl Filipiak. Back in 1997, he did a stellar CD called Hotel Real, with top-notch players. Terry Battle, Gary Granger, Traden on bass, Victor Williams on percussion, Paul Soroka on keyboards, the great Dennis Chambers, Santana's drummer from Baltimore on drums, and Carl on guitar. Just so beautiful. And Carl is doing his thing, local folks, on Saturday at Cat's Eye in Fells Point. Whenever he goes, people are waiting outside to get in. He is just that amazing. Well-versed in all kinds of guitar, including Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles. He's got his own take on jazz, as you heard. That's a Stevie Wonder song, because we've ended as lovers. Whew! If you get a chance to see him doing his own thing or with Lafayette Gilchrist and the New Volcanoes, get ready, because your socks will fall down. I'm not kidding. Speaking of which, here's more socks fall down music for you. Philadelphia in the house, not only with David P. Stevens on guitar and Gerald Veasley on bass here, but more of some of Philly's finest backing them up. David's got a new CD out. We'll talk about that in a few shakes, but right now let's go back a few years to a project called The Shed. And this is called The Jujack Hustle on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. This is Hybrid Jazz. Oh, I bet you never heard Bob Marley like that before. His song, Waiting in Vain, done by the very capable Gilded Throat of Lynn Verano. Now, let me tell you about Verano. Now, they've been on the show, what, 2-3 times? Just as we said earlier with Eric Scott, nobody saw what was coming as far as this magical group is concerned at the Whammies. Verano have been together not that long of a time, but there's just so much beauty in Lynn's singing and her husband Ken doing guitar, looking at her with love on the stage and in the studio, then David on another guitar and Pete on drums. There's just something so beautiful about the chemistry of this group and their love for a lot of different kinds of music. But because Lynn is French from Quebec and Ken is British, they have a more all-encompassing view of what jazz is, or pop jazz, or whatever you want to call it. But this Jazz Samba project got into a whole lot of ears. And you talk about an impact. At the Whammies just several days ago, Verano won. Lynn won for Best Jazz Vocalist. They won for Best Duo or Group. They won for Best Jazz Recording, Jazz Samba Project. And then Lynn also won an award for her French learning album for children called Cha-Cha-Cha, so that children can learn French at a young age. She won an award for that as well, which is really getting some accolades. So congratulations to my friends Verano. I know that they are over the moon, and if you haven't picked up their new CD, please do so. VeranoMusic.com has the places that you need to go in order to purchase. Do what apparently so many are doing, getting the music and enjoying the absolute love that comes from Lynn's throat. She enjoys herself so much when she's on that stage. It's what you want every performer to be. She loves the stage. She loves her husband. She loves you in the audience, and she loves the songs. She caresses each song that she does. It's a beautiful thing to behold. Greg Adams, we heard from. Oh, I love this CD so much. Came out in the mid-2000s, 2006, 2007. Cool to the Touch is the name of the CD. Felix the Cat is the name of the track. Woo! On the album, among others, Paul Jackson Jr., Eric Marienthal, Mindy Hebert, Johnny Beaumont, who is still with Greg, Leland Sklar, who I absolutely adore. Just beautiful stuff. Greg does a trumpet version of Sting's If Ever I Lose My Faith in You. Woo! So beautiful. That track is just so much fun. And actually, Greg's got that vibe going, that Portuguese, Brazilian, let's take a trip, let's take it now kind of vibe on a few tracks. It could become one of your favorites, I'm not kidding. Greg is an East Bay Soul doing their thing, picking up dates left and right. If you go to the East Bay Soul page on Facebook, you'll see. I tried to get to Greg Adams or East Bay Soul today, but apparently a lot of people are having the same idea. I can't get tour date information, but you know it's there. Greg is just happy as can be doing his thing. This second or third go-round in his career, it's lovely. And we just heard from one of his best friends earlier, Paul Schaefer. If you didn't know this, Greg, a couple of months ago, was on the David Letterman show for a whole week, filling in. Ooh, it was fun, especially when Lionel Richie was on. David P. Stevens started that three-song set, Philly's Own, along with Gerald Veasley. David, from his The Shed album from a few years back, the Jujack Hustle, David's got a new album, Epiphany. The CD release party is March the 1st at Gerald's Club in the Crown Plaza in Reading, which is the site for Burke's jazz. And this apparently is a big celebration because it's not only David's CD release party for an album that's really getting some buzz, but also it's going to kick off Gerald's bass boot camp, which is a big thing. I talked to Luther, Gerald's man at the helm yesterday, and Luther is having a real good time getting this together. I say that with tongue-in-cheek. He's tearing his hair out. But he's really excited about the possibilities of not only the bass boot camp, but David coming up for the CD release party, and something that I don't know I'm supposed to talk about, so I'll keep it half under wraps. But suffice it to say this. If you love what Gerald does when he makes the rounds with his Sounds of Philly show, and this time around at Burke's Jazz, it's going to be Carol Riddick, love you, Carol, Nick Colleone, Kindred the Family Soul, yes, Phil Perry, yes. If you like the concept of that, you may be able to have it in your hands one of these days. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, all right. David P. Stevens and Gerald Beasley together. That was smoking, wasn't it? Mm. Now, speaking of CD release parties, there's another one. Oh, God, get me out of the house. I'm going to do that tonight, heading toward Annapolis. Fred Hughes has been on the show. Fred, one of those guys, an educator, a conductor, a master clinician, an amazing piano player, one of the jazz ambassadors who has toured the world. And this album called In the Mist, gaining a lot of acceptance in the straight-ahead circles. Oh, Lord, do I love to mix it up on the show. Thank you, Jesus, for the opportunity. This is the title track of this, actually very hot, can I just say? If Fred hears this, he's going to be so embarrassed. But he is so gorgeous and so talented. This is In the Mist on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. And I'll tell you where the CD release party is after we hear the track.
Thank you. Sunday kind of love, a love to last past Saturday night. And I'd like to know it's more than love at first sight. And I want a Sunday kind of love. Oh yeah, yeah. I want a love that's on the square. Can't seem to find somebody, someone to care. And I'm on a lonely road that leads to nowhere. I need a Sunday kind of love. I do my Sunday dreaming, oh yeah, and all my Sunday scheming, every minute, every hour, every day. A certain kind of lover who will show me the way in my arms. Need someone to enfold, to keep me warm when Mondays and Tuesdays grow cold. Love for all my life.
Have mercy. A big appreciation to my son for letting me use his computer and finding out to my utter joy that he had downloaded these exceptional tracks, and that is one of them. Woo! Etta James, Sunday Kind of Love from At Last! 1961. You know, thinking about this, because I just love Etta James so much, I am not alone, that's for sure. This particular song was published in 1946, and the next year Louis Prima and his orchestra did it, and he was one of the co-writers of the song, by the way. An actual army of people have recorded that song through the years, including when I was on country music radio, oh, so long ago now, Reba McEntire. But Etta James, when you hear her do that song, you can maybe do it in a ladylike kind of way, or if it's a guy singing it, you can do it in a gentlemanly kind of way, just more subtle. Nothing subtle about Etta James. And that was the beauty of her. She was raw. She was earthy. She made you conjure visions of that Sunday kind of love, and you're starting to rip your clothes because you know what she's talking about. Just beautiful. And it's just crazy to think that we lost her. God knows there was a lot of living in those years, but she suffered so and just passed last January. And it's odd to think about this because Etta passed 3 days after Johnny Otis, who essentially found her talent and promoted her. And then when she passed, Red Holloway, her beloved sideman, left us a month later. So, you know, I always take stock in these things, like there's something that means something when that happens. Just a family of unearthly talented and just passionate players all got together at that appointed time. This was back in 1961 that she did At Last, with that little blonde do that she had, just this little pudgy face and this little girl that belted out these songs like there was nobody's business, and there's nobody that's going to be ever like her again. Just amazing to consider. Ahmad Jamal. Actually, we had two Pennsylvania guys back-to-back. Ahmad Jamal, Poinciana. Just classic song. AhmadJamal.net has more information. One of the more fascinating cats that's still with us in jazz. He'll be 83 in July. And what he was able to do was something that Jonathan Kreisberg was talking about when he was on the show during the first hour. Ahmad Jamal did his piano work a whole different way. All those fast, lightning speed, actually, piano riffs that so many of the jazz cats had cultivated and expected to be doing for a while, and here comes Ahmad Jamal. Like this cool cat that everybody paid attention to when he walked into the room, and he just believed in space and time for those notes. And in some circles, of course, absolutely embraced, and other people he pissed off. That's just the nature of the beast. You know that. It's just amusing to consider this, but still doing his thing. Actually, he's got some dates booked in 2014, and that was one of the primary moments of his life when he did that song. Israel Crosby, so much a part of his life, and Vernell Fournier, if you prefer, best in bass and drums, who just got him. And it's just beautiful to behold. Mm. Oh, and by the way, a little piece of trivia for you. Matt, in the chat room, you'll appreciate this. Clint Eastwood, when he was sane, he did the Bridges of Madison County. And he big jazz head, as you know. So he included Poinciana and another Ahmad Jamal track in the movie. Yeah. Fred Hughes. Thank you, Fred. I don't know if you're still listening or not, but you just posted on my Facebook page. You are so welcome. Pleasure to be able to focus on your music in the mist. And it's actually the Fred Hughes Trio. And I want to make sure you know, I'm not sure who's going to be there tonight. And I guess that Fred will tell me. But on this particular, gosh, I have stuff everywhere. This is so crazy. On this particular CD, In the Mist, it was Frank Russo on drums and Keith Moeller on bass. Frank, I'm getting to know a little bit via Amy Shook. I just love his work on drums. And he is actually, we have such a hot, happening church group. When I go to Faith Christian Fellowship on Sunday, I see Frank now in the midst of these amazing people, and he belongs there, certainly. We've got the hottest collection of musicians ever at a church. And Frank Russo, if he's going to be there tonight, that's just awesome. So we'll have a chance to mingle and talk about what's happening on the jazz scene, not only in Baltimore, but in Washington, D.C., and in Annapolis, smoking towns for this kind of creativity. And Fred Hughes is one of the best. These are original compositions we're talking about now. That's pretty smashing. And again, an educator, a conductor, a clinician, a pianist, someone who has done his thing since he was a teenager and gotten paid for it. And now he's just a Lancaster, PA lad too. So it's always a pleasure to play somebody from the home state. Fred Hughes at 49 West in Annapolis tonight. So it's just a couple of steps down from Ram's Head, in case you are listening and want to go. There you go. I'm going to play two more tracks if I can possibly do it. I promised you that if I had the time, I would play Jonathan Kreisberg, the track that I played in the very beginning of the show while we were waiting for him to come on, a minute and 20 seconds, purely improvisation on his guitar from the brand new CD called One. This is Jonathan's Without Shadow on Hybrid Jazz. For Jess. Oh, man, one of my favorite tracks ever. And, gee, you better know that that's true. Abstract Truth, the name of the group from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Seasons Change, title track featuring G. Lawrence Francis and friends, including Roy Richardson on soprano and alto sax, and lead and background vocals, and Richard Tucker on guitar, a whole host of folks. Abstract Truth is really close to my heart because they showed up at a time when things were smoking in the county right up the road. There was a club, you've heard me talk about this, maybe called Bliss. This was one of those clubs that nobody wanted to leave once you got there. The parking was free. It was easily accessible from the highway. The hosts, Sarah and Claudio, were the most gracious hosts in the world. The food was off the chain, and the music was finer than frog's hair. Okay? It was unbelievable. And Abstract Truth came to my attention via WSMJ, I'm sure. They came to the radio station where I was working, not SMJ at the time, but somewhere in Harford County. There was, what, 8 or 9 of them, maybe? Am I exaggerating? Maybe not that many. There was a bunch of them gathered in the studio. The door could not be shut. So they were doing live music with my microphone in the adjacent room. They were so full of flavor that Harford County went nuts that night. There were some personnel that were in Abstract Truth at that time that are such wonderful people, and they enjoyed the music so much. They sounded like world fusion. They sounded like jazz. There was a lot of soul in them. God knows they had these jazz riffs down. G on bass was just unbelievable. The other guys just added a certain kind of dimension. And the group has changed over the years. I haven't seen them for a couple of years now. But holy tamale, was it wonderful. Abstract Truth, Seasons Change. This is from 2008. And if you get a chance, maybe you can go to abstracttruthmusic.com and pick it up. Just really the sound of Philadelphia, what can you say? Can't play my outro music. I have about maybe 60 seconds or so. You also heard Jonathan Kreisberg and One, and that track was called Without Shadow. And there is a Jonathan Kreisberg, KreisberG.com. Go there and experience more bliss. I don't know what to tell you about next week. The shows are really getting to be off the chain, and personnel is changing all the time as to who's going to be on the show. But we'll have some celebration next week. Thank you so much for being there. God bless you. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you on Tuesday on Hyper Jazz.